welcome to the AVOD. I'm Count Vargelon.
I'm DM.
And tonight, movies with, I want to say a theme, but nothing that can approachingly be called a theme.
Monsters.
Monsters.
That's a theme,
both
I guess.
Both feature monsters. And neither are the movie Monsters.
Which really is a blessing because
it's
that movie is
always
isn't
a blessing. Such a garbage movie. And yet it got that guy the Godzilla job. So.
Weird.
Feel bad about the world, people. Feel bad about the world.
This explains a lot about Godzilla.
It really does, doesn't it?
Why it's not about Godzilla.
No. We want to know more about this a-hole reporter and this spoiled lady who he has to hang out with, but is kind of a dick to all the time, so they fall in love?
Yeah.
Oh, God, it's a terrible movie. Anyway, don't watch Monsters is our message this week. We do have other messages, so here's some random crap.
I have a book report.
Ooh, I love when that happens.
So the new Pendergast novel came out.
I just saw that on Amazon. I'm like, oh, God, I wonder if she's already got this or if I should try and buy it for her. And then I'm like, she just had a birthday. I just gave her something for her birthday. And there's no way she doesn't already have this book.
Oh, yeah. Well, weirdly, so it came out on December 31st.
Oh, okay.
But it wasn't in stores right away.
Really?
Yeah.
So, like, it went to digital places first?
No, so I don't know what the deal was. So I went into a bookstore near my work and I just ordered it to the store so I wouldn't have to pay for shipping.
Nice.
And then when I went to go pick it up, it was actually in store. So it's like, oh.
Thanks,
but
guys.
Apparently I paid less. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That is weird. I have not heard of that happening.
Yeah, I've never seen that before because these guys are like, they're best selling authors. So
yeah,
it doesn't make sense to me that those books wouldn't be in stores on the release date.
Yeah, and it's weird because, I mean, I'm one of the people, I've never experienced this because I'm one of these terrible people destroying publishing and small businesses by only ever buying stuff on Kindle.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sometimes you need the book in your hands.
I know, I agree with you, I'm just, it's a bad habit. It's a really bad habit.
And
I understand what these
can't read on Kindle. Like, I started reading House of Leaves.
Yeah?
On Kindle, I'm like, this is not going well.
Really?
Yeah, because you need the book in front of you so that you have the text and you have all the footnotes.
Okay.
Same time in front of you. Also, I read, what's it called? Wilderness of Error on Kindle, and that was not a great experience.
I am not familiar with Wilderness of Error.
That might not be the title. I want to say Errol Morris. Did he actually write that?
Well, I mean, Errol Morris makes documentaries mostly, but I know he's written books as, I think he wrote a book as well. Is this the Jeffrey McDonald thing?
Yes.
Yeah, then he did write that.
Okay, yeah.
Poor Jeffrey McDonald. Jesus.
I truly believe he did not kill his wife.
Me too. I'm right there
Absolutely
with you.
Absolutely not. Yeah.
I don't think he murdered his family.
No.
And you know my favorite Jeffrey McDonald related story? Is they did a Jeffrey McDonald episode of Criminal Minds where Kyle Secor played Jeffrey McDonald, right? And yeah, it was killer hippies, right? And he had been wrongfully in jail for 25 years or whatever. But then even though that had been their point of view about the Jeffrey McDonald episode, a story when they did their Jeffrey McDonald episode, later in another episode when they were just randomly name-checking serial killers, they're like, and then again, Jeffrey McDonald murdered his whole family because he was bored with them. And I'm like, wow, you did a 180 on that guy really hard, Criminal Minds. I want to know your feelings about this.
Oh my God.
So yeah, Criminal Minds had a complicated relationship with Jeffrey McDonald is the only piece, I can offer to the Wilderness of Errors story. Although, man, I've got to read that book. Although I guess I am going to, I'm going to watch the documentary as well.
But... So anyway, back to this other book that I read.
Yes. We're not here to talk about Wilderness of Error. I literally just remembered that.
No, we're here to talk about Verses for the Dead.
Wow. That's a good title.
Right? And it's a good book. We are finally back on track.
Yay.
Because.
Yeah, I know. You reported on a couple of rough books there.
Well, it got pretty bad. Like, the Helen trilogy was okay. And then it just got really weird with this Diogenes stuff and Constance. Yeah. And I do not like her character these days.
Diogenes is his evil brother?
Yes.
Okay. There you go.
And then there's, they seem to be trying to climb out of that hole that they dug themselves into. City of Eternal Night. I reported on that and it was like pretty good. And this like, we're
back
finally
on all cylinders.
Oh yeah. Firing on all cylinders. It's just Pendergast and he's saddled with a partner, which he's not too happy about. And it's weird murders and it's just everything you want from
a Pendergast book.
A Pendergast book. Yeah.
Yes. Except the villain probably isn't a werewolf.
The villain is never a werewolf.
Damn it.
One he of actually these cracks days. Jokes, which is amazing.
Nice. So is this, I mean, is this happening as a TV show or is it not? Cause they announced that like a year and a half ago.
No, it's been canceled.
Oh, damn it.
Oh, summer.
I'm excited. There's like three people I know love these books and I've only read like two of them. Mm-hmm. Relic and whatever the second one is.
Reliquary.
Thank you. Shouldn't have been that hard to remember. Yeah. I mean, if the TV show is never going to happen, I should just sit down and read them because everyone I know who reads them loves them. So, you know,
yeah,
it's kind of universal acclaim in the tiny subset of people I know who read the books. But you're very different people.
You just can't be wrong.
Well, you're all very different people. So that's actually a pretty good cross section, I'm going to say. Of nerds who like books.
Okay.
Within that subset. But that's what I am too, so it's fine. All right. No, that is great. I, for my part, have a video game to recommend, and it's just a recommendation. I'm not going to make a big deal out of it. I don't have to explain what this is. We already played it on the Hidden Object Guru channel. It's Resident Evil 2. Mm. I got to play it. It's fantastic. They just did a great job. Resident Evil 2 already had a great story. Right? It already had a fantastic story and it just needed modernized gameplay and it got that. Now, the problem is, and this is the one problem, the original version had essentially two full campaigns. So each character had exclusive locations and exclusive bosses. So it was a majorly different experience depending on which character you played as that changed depending on which character you played first and which character you played second. So Leon A, Claire B was a different experience for both characters than Claire A, Leon B. Now, this one is not that different. Both characters have unique locations and there is a completely separate arsenal for each character. So there are no weapons in common, but it's all the same bosses except for one at the very end. It's all the same bosses. You just have different locations they go to. So it's still really great. It's just not quite as innovative as the original, but the gameplay is leaps and bounds above the original to the point where like, if you tried to play the original now, you just kind of be, ugh. How did anyone ever do this? Whereas this thing is just, well, you saw it. It's smooth as silk.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
it's gorgeous.
It's gorgeous. It plays smooth as silk. Like I can't say enough good things about it. One, and this isn't even really a complaint, just so much of an acknowledgement about something in the game. They don't have a mercenaries mode on launch day. Like a lot of people love the mercenaries mode in the Resident Evil games where you go, you kill zombies, you score points, you unlock costumes. It's a very fun side activity that every Resident Evil game since Resident Evil 2 has had, right? And this one doesn't have one on launch day, and that might scare some people off. But apparently Capcom has said one is coming soon. They just haven't put a date on it yet. So hopefully sooner rather than later, but it's not there yet. Yeah. Love it. Think it's great, can't get enough of it, but it's not the fully featured Resident Evil 2 everybody might have been hoping for.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it looks beautiful, and I recommend it wholeheartedly, even at full price. And okay, $90 is a lot, but it's that kind of
wow,
what video
that
games
is
cost
cheap.
Now. If wow, you live in Jesus. Canada, that is what video games
holy
cost.
Holy shit.
$90. It's
wow.
Crazy. $80 plus tax, but we have a lot of tax here. Yeah, so be prepared. It's going to blow a hole in your wallet, but you know, it is that amazing.
Holy shit. All right.
You weren't prepared for that.
Not at all. No.
Next up, movie news.
First movie, then movie news.
Oh, then movie news. Right. Yes.
So I watched the Fire documentary.
So did I.
Netflix. Oh my God.
Everyone has to watch this documentary.
Okay, so we don't have Hulu in Canada, so we don't know how it compares to the Hulu documentary.
Fire Fraud, yeah. Apparently, Fire Fraud isn't as good because he participated in it.
Well, all I know is that he's in Fire Fraud. He's in this one as well, but he's not being interviewed by the documentarians. It's just a video of him being a douche.
The mistake he made was, I guess, hiring all these people to film him and, like, either not having a contract that he owned the footage or violating the terms of the contract so they got to keep the footage when he didn't pay them or something, because he's terrible. And there's so much behind the footage of scenes footage of him being terrible to the point where you see him telling people, just film us all the time.
I know, at the end there, it's like, film, just always be filming. It's like, you're committing crimes on camera.
You commit fraud on camera. And it's like, I didn't know. I honestly, it never occurred to me that selling tickets could be a Ponzi scheme.
Well, if you actually don't have tickets.
No, but it's brilliant. He would say, I'm getting you these high-end tickets. So like, he would say, I'm selling you high-end tickets for show one, right? And then by the time show one comes up, he doesn't have the tickets. So he pays three times what he charged the people for the tickets. Then he gets them the tickets, but he has already pre-sold tickets to show two, and he uses that money to buy the tickets to show one, and then he uses the money from show three to buy the tickets to show two. But it's like, at some point, you're going to run it. Not enough people are going to buy tickets to the next show, and it's all going to collapse on you because it was a Ponzi scheme.
No, but some of these shows, he couldn't actually
come up with the tickets.
It's impossible to get the tickets. Like for the Met Gala, for instance, they make that clear in the movie. You have to be invited.
By Anna Wintour herself.
You can't just buy a ticket to the Met Gala. It doesn't work like that.
Well, no, yeah, because, and that's, no, I was talking about the first version of his ticket selling thing. The one at the end is just out and out fraud. It's just a fraud at the end. But like the first version, it was all a Ponzi scheme. And at the end, he's just committing fraud on camera.
Oh no, in the first, when you mean with his credit card.
Yeah, with the credit card.
And the VIP stuff. No, that wasn't even, no, cause he was just straight up canceling those events. Yeah, they just weren't even happening.
Yeah, no, some of them he canceled because he would just constantly cancel tickets on people. Oh my, it's so fascinating. And when you find out that all of the rewards for his card were just like paid for with some guy's Amex.
How awful is that? I felt so badly for his employees who just got fucked.
So badly.
But it's so interesting watching this disaster unfold.
Yeah.
Because you really get the sense, like, he really thought that he could pull off this festival. Because everyone refers to it as a big scam. Yeah. And I'm like, that's actually not what was going on here. He didn't know what he was doing. It got in over his head. And then it all just fell apart.
Well, it's like, and I mean, the message seems to be, for his whole life, he had just kept scamming forward. Everything had just kind of worked out for him. And so he assumed this would just kind of work out as well.
Yeah, but it's like, no, you need at least a year to plan a music festival.
Do it in 2 months. 2 months!
Unbelievable. It just goes on and on and oh my god, it's great. Yeah, so
you have to.
It is
90 some minutes long, and we have talked about 1 minute of the tragedy in this story. It is just constant awfulness after awfulness after awfulness the whole time, and you have to see this story.
Yeah.
He's the worst, and it's incredible to watch. And I would encourage anybody to check out that Fire documentary.
Yeah. Oh, that was great.
And so yeah, so the director, Chris Smith, he was just able to get all of the footage from all of the other filmmakers, I guess. Like, I guess everybody wanted to let people know what this guy was. And I kind of love that about it. It's
it was an unmitigated disaster.
We all got screwed.
People want to know what happened, so.
Yeah. I just love that all of the other guys who own this footage are like, yeah, we all got screwed and we want people to hear the whole story. And it's so rare that you get to hear the whole story in that way. So, no, just an amazing documentary that everyone should watch.
Yeah.
It's just called Fire.
Yes. I mean, it has a subtitle, but who cares?
No. I mean, if you go to Netflix, Fire is the giant thing on screen.
It has a picture of a woman's butt. So can't
thanks,
miss.
Netflix.
Thanks for that.
Thanks, Netflix, for perpetuating the exact kind of marketing that the film very, very in great detail criticizes.
Mm. Yes.
You're the worst sometimes, Netflix. But we'll talk more about that next time. All right. And you do have movie news.
I have I'm not movie going news. Crazy.
Yes.
So I don't know if you heard this. Color Out of Space is going into production.
Really?
In Portugal, of all places.
Well, you know, Spain got its day gone, so Shadow over Innsmouth, so okay, sure. Like, is anybody attached, or is it just a full Portuguese film?
I'll tell you who's attached.
Jeffrey Combs.
No.
Oh, damn it.
You want to guess again?
I can't.
Nicolas Cage.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, we're covering the hell out of this.
Oh, this is the best Lovecraft story. Also my favorite.
I don't know if it's the best.
Of course it's the best. Everybody
it's amazing. I'm not saying it's not an amazing story. It's an amazing story that everyone should read. But do you consider the case of Charles Dexter Ward a novella or a story? Because it is pretty long. It is, okay. If we're not counting novellas, then yeah, it's the best story. I mean, you gotta admit, Charles Dexter Ward is amazing.
More to the point, right. Nicolas Cage is gonna ruin this movie.
Completely. It's gonna be a disaster.
Oh. I don't know how I feel about this. I'm actually pretty upset. I know exactly how I feel. Not good.
Now, I'm trying to remember who was in that adaptation of... Was it Will Wheaton in the adaptation of Color Out of Space we watched here for the show?
From the 80s? Don't remember.
I feel like it was Will Wheaton and like John Schneider from The Dukes of Hazzard was like the government guy looking into the water pollution.
I don't remember at all.
I feel like this is a real movie we watched.
And sure, I'm
a little worried that I invented it in my head.
Maybe it was some other movie very much like Color Out of Space.
Maybe.
That we watched.
But yeah, Color Out of Space. I can't wait. Obviously the producers came up with the $1 million that they needed to make this, to get, you know, him to get on a plane to Portugal. And I love that. Maybe $2 million. I don't know how much he charges these days, but here's the thing about Nicolas Cage. He makes a lot of bad movies because he has tax problems, right?
He has a huge debt to pay off.
He has a huge debt to pay off. The man sued his financial advisor for not being better at talking him out of wasting his money.
That's not his fault, dude.
That's not his fault. That's not his job. His job is to advise you whether or not you take the advice. What you were looking for is like an executor or someone with power of attorney. But you didn't give him that, so it's not his job.
Exactly.
But what I will say about Nicolas Cage is he doesn't do the Bruce Willis thing. Where, as we saw in that terrible movie, Marauders, Bruce Willis's thing is, you have to come up, he will do any movie, but the rule is, you have to come up with $2 million, and for that, you get him for 16 hours. And that's it.
And that's it.
And as much footage you can get in 16 hours, that's how much Bruce Willis you will have for that $2 million. Hmm. Whereas Nicolas Cage, he shows up, he's there every day, and no matter how bad it might be, he puts in a real performance.
Well,
no matter how bad it might be.
A performance, let's say.
Look, I didn't say a good performance, but it's always a performance.
Eric Roberts,
Eric Roberts, who you can of course hire for a sandwich.
For a sandwich, he's always great.
By the way, I want to point out that that's not that much of an exaggeration. I talked to David Ducoteau about Eric Roberts. When we were at a con together, we were both presenting the same con. I'm like, he's right over there. I gotta go ask him about Eric Roberts. Guy. Right?
And you would go ask him about Garth Marenghi. You wanted to ask him something about Dark Place.
No, I didn't. No, I told him about the Dark Place episode that was ripped off of his Killer Eye movie. Yeah. I did tell him about that. And I went to interview him about that, and he had no idea what I was talking about when I said Dark Place. So I just told him about Dark Place and told him to go watch the thing.
Uh-huh.
I can't really, I didn't have it on, like, my phone to show him. Which, had I had a smartphone at the time, I actually should have done that, because you could have, like, brought it up on YouTube, because I'm sure it's on YouTube. But anyway, but I talked to him about Eric Roberts, and I'm not saying our theory that he will work for a cold sandwich is true, but he literally was in a number of movies because he is like, David Ducoteau is friends with his wife and he wasn't doing anything that day. So it is not hard to get Eric Roberts to be in your movie. He's one of the best actors living, an amazing star from the 1980s. Like, you can watch movie after movie from the 1980s and you're like, this is one of the best actors I've ever seen. And now literally appears in just whatever movie because he's not doing anything that day.
He just happens to be driving by. Oh, you're filming a movie, are you?
Yeah, I'll be in that. It's fine. What do I care?
I got nothing going on today.
Just going to cash a residual check from Runaway Train. I'll be in a movie.
Anyway,
back enough to about my... Eric Roberts. I believe we have a list.
Yes, we do have a list. Today's list is the 20 scariest animated horror movies from Disney classics to adult anime.
Oh, wow. I'm kind of excited about this. Let's get started.
All right, these aren't enumerated. It's just a list.
Okay.
Paranorman.
I haven't seen Paranorman.
There.
A lot of people liked it, and it was comparatively well reviewed at the time. I remember going to a convention, and they had a big display of the art of Paranorman. People really seem to like that movie, but I never got around to seeing it. No. Go.
Nightmare Before Christmas.
Aww.
Great movie.
Not really scary at all, but just such a nice movie. Oh. Although Oogie Boogie's like a little, he's a little iffy. He's a little scary. Okay. I'll give you that. Oogie Boogie's kind of scary. He does have bugs under his burlap, so yeah. What more do you need, right?
Yeah.
Okay, next up.
Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island.
Best Scooby-Doo movie. And until Monster Incorporated, Mystery Incorporated happened, it was the definitive Scooby-Doo product.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Stuart Lee, my favorite stand-up comedian, has a very extended comedy routine about Scooby-Doo on Zombie Island.
Jesus, that's very specific.
It's amazing. You just have to go to YouTube, type in Stuart Lee Scooby-Doo, and be prepared for like 20 minutes of the best comedy you've ever seen.
Don't I need to have seen Zombie Island first?
You really don't, because he doesn't specifically talk about the events of the movie. It's more just, I don't want to spoil the routine. it's actually based on Zombie Island and the one with the pirate ghosts, but yes, it's amazing.
Okay.
Next,
Monster House.
Oh, I really like Monster House.
I haven't seen it. Is it worth seeing? Should I see it?
It is worth seeing. It's light, it's fun, not too scary, it's got some good action set pieces, and really good comedy, because it's made by Dan Harmon and Rob Schraub, and it was rewritten afterwards, but they're both very funny guys, and a lot of their stuff is left in the story, and you can tell that.
Oh, okay. Oh god, here we go. The Last Unicorn.
Oh god, what the hell is that? Right, The Last Unicorn. Jesus, that was a rough one. I haven't seen that since I was a kid, but I remember that being really rough.
I saw it the one time in my 20s, and I'll never see it again.
It's as sad as I remember it, and just, ugh.
Yeah, it's sad, it's upsetting.
Yeah, okay. I saw that one in school on one of those days when they were like supposed to do something outside, but then it rained. So they just grabbed a movie from the library.
What? They showed
that's how I also saw bike racing themed movie Breaking Away. Not super appropriate for children, but it's what they had.
My God.
But yeah, it was a real downer for all the kids.
Yeah, right?
Was the movie The Last Unicorn.
Okay.
Okay.
Next, I have to see this again. The Black Cauldron.
It's great. I haven't watched it since I was in my 20s. I haven't watched it in like 15 years. Watched it as a kid. Watched it again like 20 years later. And I'm like, it's good.
Yeah.
Like, it is really good.
I
would encourage you to check out The Black Cauldron.
No, because I saw it as a kid. My dad took me. So I'm like, I need to see this again.
Yeah. It's traumatic, sure, but it's really good.
Yeah. Okay. All right, next is Coraline.
Oh, I love Coraline.
I loved the book. I thought the movie was super creepy.
It is.
Yeah.
It's so creepy, so well done. Like, I'm not going to say it's better than the book, because if you have a good imagination, it isn't. But if you don't, it is. I'm not saying which of those categories I fit into, but I definitely fit into one of them.
Okay, next is The Secret of Nim.
Oh, don't ever watch that.
Great movie.
Sad forever.
Oh, no, this movie scared me when I was a kid.
It's terrifying, but it's also, it's just upsetting.
Well, when you're a kid, the sad stuff doesn't really resonate quite as much as just the terror that happens at the end of that movie. So.
Yeah, there is a lot of just nightmarish imagery in that movie. But then when you watch it as an adult, you're like, oh, it's also inconceivably sad.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's not Watership Down, but it's rough.
Well, that's next one on the list.
Of course it is. You have to put Watership Down directly after Secret of Nim.
Which I've never seen, and I don't plan to.
Nope. Not the original. Not the computer animated one with McAvoy? James McAvoy?
Sure.
They just did one for like the BBC last year that was computer animated, and apparently that didn't make it any less horrific.
I would imagine it'd be maybe kind of worse.
No. I mean, if you think that, you are forgetting what the various monstrous rabbits looked like in the original animation.
I haven't seen it. Okay. Not good. So. Okay,
don't even look at stills. You will be upset.
All right, next is The Plague Dogs.
I've never heard of this.
Well, it's also written by Richard Adams.
Oh, wow.
And it's about dogs and...
the plague.
No, they're specimens.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's for animal testing.
Jesus. Well, just like Secret of Nim. I mean,
So.
Okay, plague dogs. That sounds upsetting. Okay.
Right along.
Just move right along. I'm just going to get too depressed thinking about this.
All right, next is Fire and Ice.
What is Fire and Ice?
I don't know, but...
Is it one of the Ralph Bakshi ones?
It is.
Okay, then I do know which one it is. Like, the title wasn't jumping out at me, but now that you tell me it's Ralph Bakshi, I do remember which one that is. Okay. You haven't seen it. I did years and years and years ago when I was a stupid teenager watching all of Ralph Bakshi's stuff, because that was the in thing to do among a tiny subset of people who thought of themselves as alternative. I'm throwing a lot of people under the bus with this statement, but I stand by it. And I'm not saying I wasn't one of them. Like, I'm not going to name names, but all of us were pretty dumb kids.
All right. Not that George guy, though, with the pink hair. We all assumed you were friends.
I know.
And I love how you're like, I don't know him. Stop asking me about George with the pink hair.
I have no idea who that is. It just seems like you're the kind of guy who would know him, because you're a weirdo burnout who dresses funny. We don't all know each other. The only time in my life I will ever get to say that.
We don't all know each other. Oh my God. Okay. Next is, Resident Evil Degeneration.
Oh, that's so good, but not anywhere near as good as the last Resident Evil. I don't remember what the title is at all, but you know, the one where Rebecca comes back and it has the greatest continuous fight scene I've ever seen in my life.
It's like Revenge or something like that?
Yeah, something like Resident Evil Vengeance or something like that. If you're going to watch one Resident Evil direct-to-video animated film, it came out like 2017. It's called something like Revenge, and it is incredible. Like, they took the John Wick aesthetic to its logical extreme and made some of the best action sequences I've ever seen in my life. Also, one of the roughest stories.
Yeah.
Wow, one of the roughest stories. I was not prepared for how rough that story was going to get.
I got to watch it again, honestly.
It's so good. And that fight, and that gun-fu fight scene that Chris Redfield has with the villain, where they are just, like, shooting at each other. Like, you've seen Equilibrium, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, there's that scene in Equilibrium where, like, he and the villain, you know, oh, it turns out Big Brother was really just my boss.
Yeah.
They're having that gun-fu fight where they're, like, just slapping at each other's hands and almost shooting each other in the face over and over and over again. And it's fun, but the scene with Chris and this guy is so much better. Because it's like these two guys with guns standing 5 feet apart from each other, constantly shooting and somehow both surviving. And it sounds ridiculous, but it looks so badass.
I think the point of having Degeneration on the list, is because the boss is singularly disgusting.
Oh god, he is. Yeah, absolutely.
So.
Yeah, and I mean, and the whole setting of that is it's a great setting. The final fight scene all going down in that facility is incredible, but it's just, it doesn't have anything on, the Vengeance or whatever it was called.
Well, this isn't about action. This is about scary.
About horror. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right.
Alright, next is Soul Station.
Never heard that, those words put together in my life.
Apparently, this is a prequel to Train to Busan.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. See, you said Soul Station. I didn't realize it was Seoul.
Seoul, yes.
Yeah.
Couldn't hear the E.
I could not hear the E when you were saying that. Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Now I want to track that down because Busan is awesome.
We'll have to check that one out.
Totally.
Okay, here's something called Lily Cat.
Means nothing.
So, all right.
Is that like a sideways reference to the concept of tiger lilies?
No.
Okay.
I'll read you what's written. All right, let's get weird. If you ever wanted an animated horror movie that's inspired by Alien 2001 and The Thing, then you're going to want to check out Lily Cat.
Okay.
This 1987 anime production is decidedly less serious than many of the other entries on this list, but it's so completely bonkers that you just kind of have to watch it to see what it's all about.
Okay, that sounds really interesting.
So, I mean, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that definitely sounds interesting. Okay, next.
Vampire Hunter D, Bloodlust.
Oh, well.
Personal favorite of mine.
We've talked a lot about Vampire Hunter D in the past. We don't have to go into this again. It's pretty great. If you haven't seen it, you're going to enjoy yourself. Yeah. I envy you for not having seen it yet.
Okay, Watchmen, Tales of the Black Freighter, which I have not seen.
Garbage.
Oh, really?
Or unadulterated garbage, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And it's because they change a line, the order of lines, to try and give it a scary ending rather than a horrifying ending.
Okay.
They actually because they didn't like so much of Watchmen, the people who made the movie, I mean, the makers of this didn't understand what the story was about.
You mean Zack Snyder?
Yeah, well, no, but I mean, I don't think, did Zack Snyder direct the Tales from the Black Freighter short?
He didn't direct it, but he wrote it.
He was okay. Well, there you go. I didn't know he wrote it. I know he was creatively involved, but the point is, Zack Snyder doesn't understand what the story is about. So what he does is, at the end of the Tales from the Black Freighter, right, the guy swims back out. And they have him climb back onto the boat and have him surrounded by monsters who's about to eat him. And they talk about how a cheer goes up from the deck, right? And they don't understand that the monsters didn't want to kill or eat him. The monsters have found a new crew member for their ship. And that is what it is about. It is about turning him into a monster like them. Because at the end of the story, he can choose, like, he knows that he's become a monster, and he has a choice. He can drown in the black water, or he can grab the rope they lower down, and he grabs the rope they lower down, and a cheer rises from the deck, because he's one of them now. Mm-hmm. And Zack Snyder doesn't understand that, because he's a very stupid person. And if you need a source for that, if you need my citation, I would ask you to watch the film. That would have worked as a punchline if I could have remembered the title of that film.
Oh, you bungled that one.
Oh, I'm so sorry. The one with Rocket Baby and Something Doll and Oscar Isaac and Sucker Punch.
Like that movie.
I know you do. There's a whole episode about us vitriolically disagreeing about the film Sucker Punch.
Oh, it's just so nice to look at. Who gives a shit about the story?
I didn't say it wasn't nice to look at. I said it's proof that he's a very stupid man. And I think even you, that film's defender, could agree with that point.
Oh, and everything else he's done is garbage.
Oh no, he's only made garbage in his whole
life. He doesn't know how to tell a story.
No, and if he would let someone else write a script for him, maybe he could put out a good movie, but he's too arrogant to do that.
Yeah.
I hate you, Zack Snyder. You might say, well, he didn't write the scripts for Man of Steel. No, but he consulted extensively on them and made sure the whole concept of Superman was tailored to his terrible ideas of what superheroes are.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, like he still had he was still the lead creative voice. And if you made him direct a movie where he wasn't the lead creative voice, then you might really have something.
I wrote a whole thing about why he's terrible, so.
No, yeah, I don't need to sell you on this idea. Next up.
All right, bear with me. Please? Berserk, The Golden Age Arc 3, The Advent.
Wow. Well, yes, I'm very familiar with Berserk, but only from the comics. I haven't actually watched the animes. But given the bleakness and terrifying nightmare fuel that is everything about the world of Berserk, I have no doubt that an anime based on it would be very effective.
Well, it says here the first two Golden Age installments are relatively tame, but this third one is just completely nuts.
Yeah. It just gets so bleak and so weird and nonstop, unbelievably upsetting visuals is what the whole series is about.
Oh, all right. No, thanks.
Yeah, so Berserk, it's rough.
Okay. Next is something called Fears of the Dark.
Nope. No idea.
This is a French anthology.
Oh, cool.
That's really all I can tell you about it.
I mean, we haven't seen it. We can't weigh in on this one. Yeah. So.
All right. Wicked City.
Oh, I forgot about that.
I've not seen it. It says here, the first line, this thing is borderline hentai at times, so fair warning.
Yeah, no, it is. It really is. It's very sexual and very gross, but it's as a horror action anime, I think you can do a lot worse than Wicked City.
Okay.
I've never seen the live action version, but apparently there was one.
It says here, it could not be done in live action without receiving an X rating.
I thought they did make a live action version of Wicked City.
Well, maybe if they did, it got an X.
Would be an X rating.
Which might be why you haven't seen it.
That would be why.
Only available in the city's finer porn distribution.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, God. All right.
All right. And the last one on the list. Can you guess what it is?
Oh.
We love it. We talk about it all the time.
Now you've put me on the spot. I'm not going to get it now.
It's an anime.
Just tell me. I'm embarrassed.
Perfect Blue.
Oh, of course, Perfect Blue. What else would it be? Yeah, Perfect Blue's amazing. Again, that's another one where if you haven't seen Perfect Blue, you owe it to yourself to check out Perfect Blue. It will mess with your mind. You will be thinking about it for weeks. It will upset you, but it is totally worth it to watch Perfect Blue.
Yes. 100% yes. I kind of want to watch it right now.
Just having Perfect Blue mentioned makes you want to rewatch Perfect
Pretty
Blue.
Pretty much, because there's always something new to discover every time you watch it.
No, it's truly brilliant. Like, it is a truly brilliant
production. There's like
some
layer that is revealed to you.
Yeah. And no, I agree with that.
Incredible story about a crazy person, so.
Yeah. A crazy person's just awful descent into madness.
Yeah.
They start out crazy, but then they go nuts. Right. And that is all I'll say about the story of Perfect Blue, because I'm not spoiling anything in case you haven't seen it. All right. So yeah, it seems like there are a lot of solid horror animated films out there, or at least horror adjacent. But are they still making more of those?
They are. Animated and live action.
Oh, nice.
So that means this week our upcoming horror movie is called Camp Coldbrook.
Okay.
All right. Reality TV producer and host Jack Wilson finds himself in a tough spot when his show is about to be canceled. No. In a last-ditch effort to spark ratings, he and his producer, Angela, choose to film their next episode at the legendary Camp Colebrook, which was host to a horrific incident where the young campers were drowned in a nearby creek 20 years ago.
Okay, by the way, pause before you say any more. Okay. In this synopsis, they have not said what kind of show he hosts, so please tell me it's a cooking show.
Oh, I wish!
I need people to watch my cooking show! We're going to a haunted campground!
It's one of these travelogues, you know?
Like those shows where you go across the country in a motorcycle. But this time we're going to a haunted campground where Jason killed everybody.
That's pretty much it. Their arrival begins like any other episode of the TV show, but the crew finds that they get more than they bargained for.
When Jason shows up. Yeah.
Essentially, a ghost hunting show goes to Camp Crystal Lake. And, yeah, Jason.
We're watching all of this. We're watching the hell out of this movie.
Currently no U.S. distribution, it says.
Damn it!
A waning release.
Come on, guys. Pick it up. We need you for more Jason-related nonsense.
Well, it's ghosts. There's no actual.
I know. I know it's never actually Jason, but I want it so badly to be Jason once.
I know you do. This is the best I can do. I'm sorry.
Well, you're doing a great job.
Okay.
Okay. But yes, I know it doesn't seem that way, but we did actually watch movies this week. Although we've left very little time to talk about them.
Well, whatever.
It's fine. We'll figure it out.
We didn't discuss which one we wanted to talk about first.
Oh, what do you want to talk? Oh, okay. Well, whichever one you wrote the synopsis down for first.
All right. So our first movie tonight is Proteus.
Ooh.
After drug-addicted drug smugglers blow up their yacht, they find refuge on an oil rig. Only it's not an oil rig. It's a science lab, and the experiment is loose.
So, like all great horror movies, this is based on a novel.
I know, called Slimer.
The novel is called Slimer.
God.
I was so happy to find out that the novel was called Slimer. And it was published well before the existence of Ghostbusters. So don't say that's a reference to Ghostbusters. It's not. It massively predated Ghostbusters by like 2 years. So there you go. But yeah, based on a novel by the writer of Carnosaur. So this man has been well served by the world of low budget B-movies.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay. Please, synopsize away.
Oh my god. I don't even know where to start. First, okay, it's not a good movie.
No, it's not.
But all the effects are practical, and you gotta love it just for that reason.
Specifically, there's one effect you have to love, and that is my new favorite monster.
Thing? Charlie?
At the end of the movie, and I'm gonna just spoil this, you can watch this on YouTube. And if you just want to see your new favorite rubber model monster, just go to the last 10 minutes of the movie and you will see a tentacle beast great white shark.
But they with arms. I think they sort of outdid themselves because that thing can't move around.
No, at all. It can't move at all.
A problem for the film.
Oh, it is. Absolutely. It is not a threat in the least. But I love how it looks so much. I didn't care. But honestly, by that time in the movie, do you care about the threat at all?
Of course not.
Of course not.
Just waiting for the movie to end at this point.
Not a good movie, folks.
Not great. Kind of a weird leading man.
Yeah. Like, who's such a jerk for so long. And his reactions to people are so strange.
Yeah.
Like his behavior, every part of his behavior is weirdly off. Like everything he does is one degree off to the point where I'm like, is he like, my first thought was, is he an alien who is here to like rescue the other alien who's on the ship? Cause I didn't know what the movie was about starting out. And then he does have a secret, but when you find out his secret, it doesn't really explain how he's been behaving the whole time.
No, I think he's just like,
weird.
A he's just weird. Like, that just might be the actor.
Yeah, the actor was just making some strange choices in every line reading he had in the movie. Yeah.
And that's why I said sort of like a weird leading man, not, okay. I don't know.
No, but I mean, he's so strange that I thought it was all a plan to get him to this island, but no, he's literally just stumbled into this.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, very strange thing from the actor who you may remember as the footballer from Cliffhanger.
Cause I remember so much about Cliffhanger.
Apparently Cliffhanger isn't as important a film to people other than me as it is to me.
I actually enjoy Cliffhanger for
it's
what
a
it
good
is.
Movie.
But, it's a good... so he's one of the villains.
Yeah, remember the villain who used to be a professional football player and he's still kind of pissed off about that?
Of course not.
Then Michael Rooker kills him cause he wants to show off his football skills by kicking Michael Rooker off a cliff and then Michael Rooker kills him at the last possible. I'm talking about action sequences in the movie Cliffhanger.
God.
And this is the wrong audience for that, because I remember that movie really well.
I remember the start of that movie, and I remember he has this gun that shoots bolts into the side of Meth Mountain.
Yes.
I like that.
That's how you set up pythons.
Yes, that's exactly how it works. Yeah.
Hey, I should know. I wrote a movie, and I wrote a video game largely about mountain climbing, and I did no research. So obviously I feel entitled.
Oh my god.
To weigh in on this.
So, Proteus.
Yeah.
I forget why it's called Proteus.
Just cause, you know, they call that because protean matter, the idea is that it is something that is quickly evolving, and Charlie constantly changes, so they called it Project Proteus.
Right, okay.
Yeah, because it's constantly transforming.
Right, so basically, Doug Bradley wants to live forever,
yep.
And so he sets up this super secret science lab in international waters.
Yep.
And for whatever reason, among their test animals is a great white shark. And they inject it with whatever their miracle cure thing,
yes.
And it mutates and evolves into this monster that kind of behaves a little like the Thing, actually.
Incredibly like the Thing. The only difference is the Thing gets bigger and bigger and can split off into other people, whereas Charlie just liquefies and absorbs people, and then he can change into their bodies whenever he wants. Like, he can retransform his body into liquid, or into their form in like the blink of an eye.
Right.
Like literally in the blink of an eye, to the point where we see someone get liquefied and then someone pulls a curtain back and not only is there not any liquid left, like the sheets that the person was wrapped in are completely clean.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, so he has pretty amazing powers really.
He really does. Not really worried about the conservation of mass.
Well, to be fair, no one ever tries to pick up one of the characters who he's pretending to be, so maybe they all weigh 2,000 pounds.
True enough, you're
and
right.
They're just very dense, like Alf.
You're very right about that. And then the movie kind of like ruins itself though, because we know that Alex survives, because the movie begins with him telling the story about what happened in the movie, but doesn't end on that note.
No, it's weird that it doesn't come back to the opening.
Background to that interview. So.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, we're supposed to assume that happened? But I guess, because there's a weird moment at the end of the movie where, spoiler alert, oh no, Charlie has taken over the pilot, and he's actually the pilot, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know when Charlie was supposed to have done that, because we actually have a pretty good idea of Charlie's movements for the entire last half hour of the movie. And I honestly don't know when he could have taken over the pilot, but let's say he did. But I guess the weird part is, so Charlie just takes over the pilot and then doesn't make a big deal out of it and then just takes them home?
I guess, you know, bigger and better things.
Yeah. Like, it's, I mean, why not, right? I mean, it's not like he's trying to dominate the world or anything. He's just like,
well, we actually
happy
don't
to
know
be a,
he wants, so.
He's just, I mean, he's just a happy giant shark monster that often pretends to be people. But yeah, I do like a lot of the practical effects in this movie. There is a split open face.
Yep.
That is just very icky and very well done.
Yeah.
A little hard to look at, but I really liked that they went that far with it. Oh, and they're like, no, I'm really blank. And then like his face starts tearing open.
Yeah, that was pretty well done.
And yeah. I gotta say, I think that Charlie can be whoever he wants actually is a good reveal, because they do this very interesting reveal earlier where a character disappears and then another character comes back, and you never see any of the different characters on the ship at the same, like in the same room.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was a good surprise. It didn't occur to me that it was just one guy constantly changing shape. Like, that was not my first thought at all.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I liked when they did the little morphing facial transformation for that as well. I thought, you know, they spent a little bit of money on this movie, so way to go, Proteus.
They did, but they could have spent a little bit more, and maybe not everybody would have been totally stupid, because movie sort of has a bit of a problem wherein all of its characters are really dumb.
All the time.
And it's kind of hard to get behind a heroin addict. And really root for them to win.
Heroin addicts and drug dealers.
Bit of an issue there.
Yeah, no, it's definitely hard to be on these characters' side. I'm not going to disagree with that.
Yeah.
But, and that is the biggest problem in the film, is that it's like, you don't really care if these people succeed or not. And
yeah.
It's hard to make that the core of your movie. Like, I think they lean on the idea that, well, there are monsters out there and you want humans to be monsters, right? And I'm like, I guess? Like,
yeah, but why does it have to be these humans?
I know, right?
They're drug smugglers.
And undercover cops.
And undercover cops, yes.
Yeah.
Lest we forget. And I hoped, so there are two cops. The leading man and then this other woman.
Yeah.
And she's given off a really strong Linda Hamilton vibe, except this movie's from 1995 and T2 is 97. So it's like,
no, T2 is 1991. It's Judgment Day is 1997.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
But you just said T2 is 1997.
Judgment Day.
No,
it's May 97.
The historical event, Judgment Day, happens in 1997. The movie was released in 1991.
But it happened in 1999 and it was made in 1997.
No. This is not going to be a debate. The movie, I'm just going to say, the movie Terminator 2 came out in 1991.
Okay.
End of conversation. We're not.
All right. So,
talking about this any longer. Yes, that is why she looks like Linda Hamilton.
Okay, good.
As a direct reference to that.
So that's me misremembering stuff. All right, that's fine.
No, it's not a criticism. You're just misremembering. Let's move on.
Yeah,
that's why she looks like Linda Hamilton in it's a reference to T2. A lot of characters were made to look like Linda Hamilton after T2. It's a very common trope.
Yeah.
No, and it's interesting because you see that, you see you got the British hero, you got the woman who you think would be the Linda Hamilton style hero, but she gets heroine, but she gets sidelined really quickly.
She does.
Yeah, and I was kind of a pity because I was kind of wanted to see what was going on with the two of them, and we find out and she gets a little more screen time as a monster, but you know,
but
she doesn't really get a chance to shine.
Them isn't all that interesting, honestly.
That's true.
But just this constant, it's like, okay, time to go. Let's get off this rig. No, I need to find my boyfriend. It's like, your boyfriend is dead.
He's obviously dead. Why do you keep splitting up all of the time?
Oh my God. Just go. Just everybody go. Can't... And this will be over.
Well, no. And honestly, this is a scene where they're on a spooky oil rig. They've like seen not crazy monsters yet, but a dude acting weird. There's obviously scary stuff happening. There's water in all of the hallways, even though they're above the water line. So I don't really know
where it comes from.
Where did all that water come from?
Yeah, they're well above the water.
Yeah, they're well, because it's a fake oil derrick. So there you go. So that was a problem. And then it's like, they're like, oh, let's just, retire to our cabins and make out. I'm like, are you sure this is the best use of your time? I feel feel like this might not be the best use of your time.
Well, they went to the mess to have a snack, and now it's time for a rest. Makes perfect sense.
Okay, there you go. But so yeah, it's definitely a weird movie. It's got some very nice effects, and if you're into like the weird monster movies of the 90s, and you want to see an awesome giant shark monster, who I swear, like, I've seen that monster or something very much like it in a video game, and now I know it was a reference to this movie, but I can't remember what video game it was.
Oh, no. Yeah. That's too bad.
It's like, now I know it's a reference to this thing. All right, next up.
All right, our second movie tonight is Godzilla 3. I have forgotten what the subtitle is.
It's not important.
Didn't bother looking it up.
Apocalypse, Armageddon, something like that.
Who cares?
Yeah.
In the thrilling conclusion to the Netflix animated Godzilla trilogy, King Ghidorah attacks! Eventually.
He takes a while getting there.
If you want an object lesson in how to draw something out, this is the movie for you. Because holy crap, is it boring.
It takes its sweet time.
And then finally, when they go to wake up Mothra, I said out loud, well, it's about goddamn time. And then he doesn't.
He doesn't do anything. Anything.
Right?
She doesn't do anything. The existence of Mothra inspires a dude to like not surrender to King Ghidorah. That's it.
Pretty much.
That's all Mothra does.
It's not even Mothra. It's psychic Mothra.
It's psychic Mothra.
What a great Mothra.
Mothra doesn't even hatch.
Nope. They're just praying to an egg.
Yep. It may hatch one day, but it's not gonna hatch yet. So, here's the thing. If you watch the first two movies in this series, you might not have been 100% clear what they were about. Like what their theme was, what their message was, because I sure as hell didn't know. And maybe I'm projecting that to everyone else who watched these. Maybe I'm not. You know, maybe plenty of people were like, I knew exactly what these were about. I didn't think they were about anything. But wrapped up in, from the first Godzilla onwards, I mean, the first Godzilla was explicitly a movie about how the atomic bomb was bad, about how technology can be too dangerous to allow to exist, right? So, be careful. That's what the first movie is clearly about, the original Godzilla, right? And that theme has shown up again and again, but honestly, most Godzilla movies are just about how Godzilla is a badass and other monsters are scary. Or sometimes, Godzilla is scary and humanity's gotta try to do something about that. But it's really tough to do, because he's Godzilla.
Yeah, or there's a lot of bureaucracy you gotta get through.
Shin Godzilla, you're the best.
Great movie!
Such a great movie. Imagine a movie about like a government trying to deal with an earthquake, but instead of an earthquake, it's Godzilla. There you go. There's your movie. All of the Oscars, please. Anyway. So with this one, like they just go on and like, so after two movies of not really being sure what the message was, they just start saying, they explain the theme, which is, technology is inherently evil, and attempts to advance technology will inevitably create humanity's destruction.
So let's pray to a god from another dimension to solve all our problems for us.
Well, it's interesting because the Exians respond to that by summoning a god from another dimension to just get it over with and kill everybody. And that's the Exians' response. And the humans' response is to become cave people who just fully abandon technology.
Well, here's the thing though, in this, so there actually is something I liked about this movie. And it's development of the Exian cult.
Yes.
All that stuff was super interesting.
Yeah. When he finally gets around to explaining their philosophy, I'm like, okay, I get it now.
Yeah, but also just like him, like it's this long con essentially.
Yeah, that they've been playing on Earth for
yeah,
for hundreds of years.
Yeah,
thousands of years.
Knows. at this point. So I thought all of that, like, the religious stuff, the cult stuff, I thought was all really super interesting.
Yeah.
But it really, nothing else happens in this movie.
No, literally all that happens in this movie is a guy explains that his cult is evil. The cult does something evil. The hero punches out the guy's eye. The cult is foiled.
Right. And then the hero abandons his pregnant wife because he can't live with himself or some shit.
Dude, set the glider to autopilot at Godzilla. There.
But you, like, you just need to destroy the glider. You don't need to destroy yourself.
You don't have to destroy yourself. You have to destroy the glider and the suit of nanotech that the lady has. You don't have to kill yourself. You're abandoning your family, you dick.
Yeah, right?
Like, he was already kind of the worst, but well, he really became...
Willed. Like, he sort of becomes this hero and the messiah for the Exians, which, again, really interesting, and everything the Exians have to say about the development of religion and what messiah or prophet is super interesting.
Oh yeah, because they have this whole theory that you can't, that humans are too undeveloped to accept the word of God, and they can only hear it filtered through the words of a prophet or a hero.
But they don't.
Like, the actions of that.
So, but the hero, like, relays the word of God, but can't actually control the people.
No.
That's someone else.
Exactly.
Someone else is pulling all the strings. So I'm like, super interesting stuff.
Yeah.
And, okay, your God is actually real. He does exist in a different dimension. All right, that's cool. I'm fine with that. But then, when Ghidorah finally attacks, everyone's freaking the fuck out. It's like, well, it doesn't show up on our sensors. Well, you can see it happening. It's clear.
I know.
Who gives a shit about what your sensors are telling you? Use your eyeballs.
Well, and it's biting Godzilla, and Godzilla's obviously in pain. So isn't that all the evidence you need?
Right? And if it's some kind of, like, weird thing about how we rely too much on technology, like,
that is what they're saying. That is, again, this film is a very anti-technology.
Just, like, everyone's just so fucking useless.
That's true. No one really accomplishes anything except one time a guy gets punched in the eye.
Right. And that was, like, that part was gross when you see what he did to himself. So he could, oh, wow. Okay. Gross.
Yeah.
You know, and then what's-his-face has to kill his best friend. Oh, that's sad. He was going to destroy your world.
I know. He was going to destroy all worlds.
God. Ah.
Yeah, like, he's the bad guy. It's okay. He's been, like, he murdered your family, remember? And I mean, I know it takes him a while before he admits that, but he murdered your family, dude.
In fact, kind of talked the family into murdering themselves.
That too, yes. It's rough. And I think, I will say, I did like the presentation. Like, the whole thing in this series is they've been doing completely new concepts for the villains, right? So Godzilla is a giant mountain. Like, it's literally just a mountain that walks around, right? Mechagodzilla was a city, like a living city, right? And King Ghidorah is an extra-dimensional force that just happens to look like three dragon heads.
Yes.
Because he's a Hydra, right? And they really leaned into that. But it's like, I did like the look of King Ghidorah. Like, I was actually quite happy with that, their take on King Ghidorah. I mean, I don't like that we didn't get a fight. I don't like that we didn't get a fight, and I hate that the film took that long to get there. But the look of King Ghidorah was kind of badass, and this film, unlike almost any other Godzilla films, really manages to use the scale to make us appreciate the power of Godzilla. Because when he's unleashing his atomic breath to wipe out King Ghidorah's, control nodes, or however he's moving into our dimension.
Well, those would just be, like, his dimensional
portals. Yeah, dimensional rifts. Right? Yeah. Yeah. He's trying to close them, and it's like, okay, that looked amazing. Like, when they pull the camera back 1,000 miles away from Godzilla to get, let you see the full scope of what he's doing. That was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, I loved that visual. And, like, there's a lot of the visuals in the series that I've really appreciated, and I think they did a great job with how magnificent these creatures are, and how larger than human they are, but...
The story isn't there.
The story's just not there, and maybe it's because they just so wanted the theme to come forward, but you didn't give us a chance to get on board with these characters.
Yeah.
You never did in any of the movies. Because we watched three of them, and I was never on board really with anybody. I mean, I was kind of sad when that lady got turned into a host for a nanosuit, but that was pretty much it. You know?
Yeah, I mean, that is sad, but she spent all of her time mooning over what's-his-face.
Yeah, Haru, or whatever.
Haru, yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like, you weren't much of a character other than that one tiny thing you know, your crush on Haro, so.
Yeah.
No, totally. It was very frustrating, and I gotta say, like, they could have done so much more and put all of this badass design work and action choreography and amazing, like, animation in service of a more satisfying story.
Yeah.
And also, honestly, like, the whole idea that it's the same generation that fled Earth that all of this is happening to never really sat well with me. You know, just the whole idea that 20,000 years have passed on Earth, but they've just been like jumping around through time, like jump gates for, I guess, 20 years. That's it.
Yeah.
Every time they did a jump, 1,000 years passed on Earth. I'm like, I feel like the Exodus should have been a bigger deal, like a longer and more significant deal.
I know, my whole issue with the thing was you left Earth. It doesn't belong to you anymore.
Yeah, I know.
Also, why do you have to land your ships where Godzilla is? It's a big planet.
It's a whole planet. And Godzilla is literally just a mountain who hangs out in one place. Can't you just go to the other side of the planet?
Somewhere.
And like, if Godzilla ever starts wandering over there, you'll have 500 years of warning before he gets there. You'll have a chance to move again.
You can prepare. Yeah.
Oh God. Yeah, you're right. Like that key element. It's like, well, you said that back in the first one. It's like, we'll land next to him. We'll find out how to kill Godzilla. Well, you could just not. I don't think Godzilla cares.
I mean, you wouldn't have a movie otherwise, but then wouldn't we all be the better off for it?
Oh, and the crazy part is, like, you've got all of these people, right? The 20,000 years later humans who have made their whole society in Godzilla's shadow and look at Godzilla as being like any other natural disaster. Like, sometimes he steps on people, but usually he doesn't. Sometimes there are tornadoes, but usually there aren't.
Yeah.
Right? And at the same time, like, I have to imagine that there are, like, way more successful human mini-civilizations on the other side of the planet where Godzilla doesn't live.
Yeah.
Like, there, like, probably
it
are.
It might not even have been destroyed.
Yeah, like, there might be whole sections of the Earth that just have, like, people on it who we never find out about because these guys were so damn set on wrecking Godzilla.
It's like, we came from Japan, we're returning to Japan.
Oh.
Hey.
Come on, guys. Oh, open your mind a little. There's this place called South America. It's as far from Japan as you can get. Godzilla is provably not interested in it. Maybe check that out.
Right.
But yeah, okay. So, a disappointing end to the trilogy. It really is.
Well, it was a disappointing trilogy.
It was a disappointing trilogy. Technically masterful. No one would debate that point, but kind of a waste of everybody's time, and definitely a waste of the resources that were given to this animation studio.
Yes, agreed.
Hopefully the new Godzilla movie's better, although I don't know how it can be, because it's a sequel to Godzilla. I hated that movie so much. But yet I loved Kong Skull Island!
I know! It was so good!
I don't know how to feel now, because they've merged a terrible franchise with a great franchise.
Well, wait.
It's like when Jason met Freddy, and I'm not going to tell you which one is which.
At the very least, this new Godzilla will have lots more monsters. So
that's true. At least three monsters. There's a Godzilla, okay. There's a Kong, there's a Mothra, probably King Ghidorah.
Oh, there's King Ghidorah.
That's gotta be right.
It's
well,
in
they
the
showed the cave painting, is what I'm saying. So
Ghidorah is definitely gonna be in it.
Okay, I'm hoping so, but I don't know for sure.
But we're gonna focus on the monsters and the people running away from the monsters.
Well, we'll see. All I know is I'm very suspicious based on those trailers. I don't know what the movie's about, but they crafted a trailer that makes it look like Vera Farmiga has summoned Godzilla because she's mad about global warming. Now, I don't know if that's what the movie is about, but that is what that trailer promises the movie is about. And I'm like, you sure this is the right time to make an like a people who are against global warming are supervillains kind of movie? Cause like even South Park apologized to Al Gore. And they're South Park. They don't care about anything.
Mm-hmm.
And they apologize to Al Gore for being such assholes and being completely wrong about global warming.
Right.
So it's like, is this the right time for this message? Again, maybe that's not what the film is about, but you and I both watched that trailer and we both thought the same thing.
I didn't see it all. Maybe it could go the other way. Maybe she summoned Godzilla because fuck it. Pooped anyway.
Maybe. But yeah, they made it seem like she summoned Godzilla because that's the only way to keep humans from destroying the Earth is to let Godzilla wreck human civilization.
Right.
And that is what the trailer made it seem like. Maybe that's not the plot of the movie, but yeah, I don't know if against global warming extremists is the right thing to make the villain in your movie right.
Quite frankly, I don't care what the plot of the movie is.
You just want monsters to get punched. I know.
I want to watch monsters fight each other.
We are well aware of where your tastes lie.
I want to watch the world get destroyed. Those
Godzilla.
The two things I want to see.
Okay, there you go. And I mean, come on, Mothra. Now that we've seen the original Mothra movie, I'm kind of excited to see a new Mothra.
Hmm.
I really enjoyed that movie.
It's great.
It was a really good movie. Oh god, especially when they're like, we're afraid to make the bad guy American. So we'll make it, everything about it is visually obviously American. Everything about him is obviously American. We're gonna say he's from Russica or something.
Yeah, some ridiculous name they came up with.
Weird name to just, cause we can't say the bad guy's American. We're still a little weirded out about that time we got nuked. Which they were right to be.
Hmm.
Alright, so that was the Godzilla trilogy and Proteus. Weirdly, the like incredibly low budget 1995 creature feature was the better movie this week.
I guess.
And technically, did we enjoy it more? Yes.
I suppose so, only because, I mean, it drags a little too, but.
Not as badly as Godzilla.
Not quite as badly as Godzilla.
I mean, obviously there's more interesting stuff going on in Godzilla, but oh, does it take so long to get there?
I know.
And if you're wondering, hey, how do you summon King Ghidorah? He just needs you to believe in him enough that he can eat your soul.
Right? That's actually kind of lovely.
It is. You need to believe in him enough or he can't eat your soul. Like you really do have to have faith in King Ghidorah.
That was actually a really cool moment.
Oh, it was. It's a really cool moment when that happens.
When they're praying to Ghidorah.
Yeah.
And he manifests, but.
I know!
Oh, anyway, yeah. That's probably the best moment in the whole movie, actually.
Oh, totally. I agree with that. There's good stuff in the movie. It's just, you know, overall, it's not a good movie and it wasn't worth the trip it took us to get here.
If someone could make a supercut of just like the cult moments.
From these movies. Yeah, they might have something there.
Right? Then maybe.
Yeah, cause the cult was a really interesting concept.
Yeah.
All right. So that's that. Do you have any narcissism you would like to watch?
Oh, there should be a new episode of True North Crime coming out as soon as I get around to putting it together.
Nice.
And we'll be recording a new episode of Chicks and Dicks next week. So that's fitting
fantastic.
Up again.
Fantastic. Yeah. Can't wait for that to come back. Just in case people don't know, that second one is about romance novels.
Yes. Yes.
It's clear what the first one is about.
Yeah.
No one is confused about True North Crime.
No, the name can be a little misleading. I and a friend of mine, we read romance novels and then talk about them.
Yeah. I just think every, like, month or so you should reintroduce the concept in case people don't know. Because you don't want them to be confused about what they're getting.
Well, it's not chicks with dicks.
No, I didn't say it was.
Chicks and dicks. I mean, we could be talking about detectives, right?
You could be. That's why there are any number of things you could be talking about, which is why I like you to reintroduce it every now and then.
Oh my god, and the book we're reading now is, it's a rough one.
Oh no, I can't wait to find out.
Yeah.
Alright. So yeah, for me, constant new flood of content over at Hidden Object Guru channel. I covered the hell out of Resident Evil 2, so you're going to be able to see a lot of Resident Evil 2. That's gameplay, that's game guides, that's me. I played this, there's a bonus mission where you play as Hunk, and on a stream, I humiliated myself over and over again. I just lost and lost and lost, and it was embarrassing.
Hilarious.
And right after I stopped streaming, I decided to try it one more time, and I actually beat the thing. And even if you don't like watching video game playthroughs, I would advise you watch my playthrough of the fourth survivor mission, just because it's amazing to see someone fail so badly and still pull it out at the end. I had no expectation I could possibly win it, and somehow I did.
Wow.
And that is all I will say. I'm not going to spoil it any further, but yeah. All that, and of course, Bargellon.com for all your Criminal Minds needs. Profiling Criminal Minds is the podcast that I do about Criminal Minds. I like Criminal Minds. Well, more I like talking about Criminal Minds. But the point is, Criminal Minds is amazing. We just covered the episode. We just recorded the episode that introduces Josh Stewart to the show, who is the best. But that episode isn't going to be on the show for, like, you know, 7 weeks. So you got plenty of time to get caught up. We are pre-recording the F out of this thing.
Good. You can visit the AVODs blog at theavod.com. You can leave us a comment there and tell us how bored you were by Godzilla 3. You can send us an email at theavod@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
And I'm going to encourage you to do all of those things. So until next time, I've been Cam Vargelon.
I've been DM.
Thanks for watching and have yourselves a great evening.
Good night.